look to see when we started 1 Corinthians, but we're finally in the last chapter. It's been at least a year that we've been going through the book of 1 Corinthians, and so let me recap all the way back from chapter 1. No, I won't do that. We'll just pick up in chapter 16 and verse number 1. We'll read down to verse number 9 this evening as we start the last chapter of 1 Corinthians. Chapter 16 and verse 1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. When I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. And if it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia. And it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you, if the Lord permit. But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost. For a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. 1 Corinthians 15 was about the resurrection. Paul took us to the heights of heaven. The glorified body, when this mortal puts on immortality, when this corruptible puts on incorruption, you can't get any higher than that, and it's almost a shame that the book of 1 Corinthians didn't end at the end of chapter 15 with the resurrection. But then Paul goes from the resurrection to the collection. Boy, talk about a step down. Coming all the way down from glory and coming down from the resurrection and then talking about the practical side of living down here. Can I say the wonderful thing about God is He tells us that if we've experienced the mountaintop, it's not going to do any good unless it makes a practical difference in our life. There are a lot of folks that want to run around shouting and hooping and hollering and glory to God and all that, and I'm all for that. I'm all for giving God the glory as much as you can. But if it doesn't translate to practical living, it's worthless. It's got to do something for the life that you and I live. I think of Peter, James, and John being taken up to the Mount of Transfiguration by the Lord, and here the Lord Jesus was transfigured before them. And they heard the voice coming out of heaven, "This is my beloved Son, hear ye Him." Peter was so excited that on the way down he wanted to build some tabernacles. He wanted to just stay on the mountaintop. He wanted to lodge there for a while. And the Lord said, "No, we've got to get down to the bottom of the mountain." And they came down to the bottom of the mountain. There were some men that had met them with a man possessed of an evil spirit. And the disciples couldn't cast them out. And they were castigating the disciples. And Peter, James, and John came. They couldn't do anything. They would have rather stayed on the mountain, but they had to come down and deal with the realities of life. Paul is writing about that when he comes from 1 Corinthians 15 to 16. He comes from the resurrection and comes down and says, you know, really it doesn't have any practical service if we're not doing something down here. And so he begins to talk about the collection of the saints. I mean, could there be a more practical topic for him to talk about when it comes to living down here than talking about money? In 1 Corinthians 16, we find the three great assets of the church. The three great resources of the church. Number one is money. The resource of the church. Now I'm not talking about the Bible, the Holy Spirit, our salvation. I'm not talking about the spiritual thing, but the resources we have to get the gospel to the world. Number one is money, and he talks about that in verse 1-4. Number two are opportunities. And he talks about that in verse 5-9. And then the last thing, and probably the most important of the three, are people. And he talks about them in verse 20 down to verse 24. Notice verse 10, Timotheus. Verse 12, Apollos. Verse 15, the household of Stephanas. Verse number 17, Stephanas, Fortunatus, Achaeus. Verse 10, Aquila, Priscilla. That is the church. The church is the people that make it up, and that's one of the great assets that the church has. As we've given testimony tonight, some folks to say, I'm here because somebody did this. I'm here because somebody said that. That's the asset. The money, the opportunity, and the people are what makes the church go forward. And as we look at the next 23 years of Bible Baptist Church, that's what we're looking for. Using the resources to honor and glorify God. The first one we listed there was money. Some people don't look at money as a resource to distribute, but as an asset to hang on to. And if we look at our money as a resource to distribute for the glory of God, we'll get a whole different aspect and outlook on our money. When we realize that God has entrusted us to give back to Him and to further His kingdom and to use for His service. Now, let me say this. Paul, in these verses, is not talking about tithing. He's talking about a special needs offering. He's talking about a collection for the saints, the poor saints in Jerusalem. Paul had a burden for the poor saints at Jerusalem. Now, I'm going to walk out on a limb and speculate as why that is, because the Bible doesn't tell us. But we just notice that everywhere, when he goes to the church of Galatia, when he goes to the church of Philippi, you know what he does? He wants them, those Gentiles, to take up an offering for the poor saints back in Jerusalem. It's not for the church at Jerusalem. See, a lot of denominations get this all backwards and say, well, all these small churches were funneling money back to the big church. That's not what they were doing. The money wasn't going back to the church at Jerusalem. It was going to the poor saints in Jerusalem. And Paul had a burden for that, and everywhere he went, as you read through his different epistles, he's talking about taking up an offering for the poor saints at Jerusalem. It was a special needs offering. It is not the tithe, it is something in addition to the tithe, and we'll talk about that as we look about. First of all, in verse 1 to 4, the collection for the saints at Jerusalem. That's what Paul's writing about, the collection for the saints at Jerusalem. Notice, if you would, first of all, verse 1 and 2, the saving of the collection. He said, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. Now again, there's a principle of giving that we carry over to tithing here. But this offering is not talking about tithing. Paul is talking about something in addition to the commandment of tithing. Jesus told the scribes and Pharisees, you should tithe, you should give alms, you should pray, but don't forget the greater things like love. But he told them, you should do the other things. So tithing is a commandment of the New Testament, something that we're to do. But then after that, we're allowed to give something else. We have not given anything until we give the tithe. God does not recognize any of our giving till we have, first of all, given our 10% the way God tells us to give it, on the first day of the week in the collection of the saints. But after we've done that, now we begin to give out of a heart of love. Now we begin to give out of a heart of sacrifice. See, the first 10% doesn't belong to us anyways. It's not ours. It's not ours to decide what we're going to do with it. I've had folks before say, well, Pastor, I bought something for the church and I took that out of my tithe. Now, I appreciate the heart. I appreciate the generosity. Most of the times when they did, it was a piece of furniture. It was a picture that we didn't use in the church anyways because nobody asked for it and we didn't want it. That's not what the tithe is. The tithe is giving our money back to God for the furtherance of the gospel, for the cause of the church, to pay the light bill, to pay the insurance, to give us the facilities that we have, to buy the gospel tracts, to put the fuel in the bus and the van and the different things that go around. That all comes from our tithing. That's how we give to God, our 10%. Now, in addition to that, there's the collection for the saints. Now, I might compare it here. I'm not the Apostle Paul. If you didn't know that, I'm letting you know right now. I'm not the Apostle Paul. I don't have a burden for the poor saints at Jerusalem. But do you know where the pastor's heart is at Bible Baptist Church? Do you know where his burden is in the offering that's above and beyond the general offering in the morning? I think you know where it is because you can look at the pictures on the side walls around here. Our burden is for missions. Now, Paul had a burden for the poor saints of Jerusalem, but it was not a commandment for all churches to do that. That was his burden that he communicated to the church, and the church gathered the money and they sent it back to the poor saints of Jerusalem. I believe Paul had a burden for them because he was one of the reasons they were poor saints. Back in his pre-converted days, he was the one that took them and bound them and threw them in prison and killed the man of the head of the family, the bread earner, the money earner. And Paul had a burden for that church back in Jerusalem. Also, we read about a great famine that came in the days of the early church. And so Paul had that burden for that and so forth. In the churches that he started, the churches he began, he passed that burden on to them. We have a burden for missions. We have a burden to get the gospel around the world. God, I believe, blessed the church at Corinth because they took up Paul's burden. God has blessed our church because we've taken up the burden for missions around the world. How do we do that? By the collection for the saints. Notice, if you would, the saving of this collection. Verse number 1. Notice four things about this collection. First of all, the collection is presented. The collection is presented. Paul gives to them this thought of this special offering in verse 1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches, I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Now let's take that word order. There's two ways to look at that order. Number one, like a military order. I've given order to the churches. I've told them to take that offering for the poor saints. I have commanded them. I don't believe that's the meaning of the word order. The other word for order is to be organized. Let all things be done decently and in order. And I believe what Paul is doing is he's saying, I've set out a pattern here of how you can raise this collection for the poor saints at Jerusalem. So when he says the order, he's talking about presenting to them the free will offering system, of showing them a way that they can give beyond their tithing so that they can give to meet the needs of others. I would simply ask you and I tonight, are we giving beyond our tithe? Are we taking care of the tithe first, doing what God commands us to do? Then beyond that, are we taking care of others through that? I am encouraged. There are times that I know within our congregation, it goes unnoticed, it goes unsaid, that somebody knows that somebody's got a need and someone else is helping them financially to take care of that need. I call it the Baptist handshake. That's when you go to shake somebody's hand and you've got that $20 bill or that $50 bill kind of folded up in there and you shake hands that way and you meet the need of someone that has a need. We've got folks in our church, folks, that have a need. I get folks almost every week, that phone rings or somebody comes in the front doors and finds me in my office and they need money for their rent payment, they need money for their electric payment, they need money for diapers for the kids, they need money for this or that. There's a great need out there. And I'm not against that need, but you know what our first responsibility is? The need of this church right here. To take care of one another. We do that through being a blessing to one another. Through the collection of the saints. And Paul gave them an order of how to do it. He presented to them this order. Again, not a military command, but an organizational way to give. We had some folks come years ago to the church in Cambridge. And they were going to start a home, I believe, in Cambridge for people on the street. All right, not a bad idea. There are homeless people that are legitimately homeless and let somebody else try to weed them out and figure out, you know how that goes. But there's a need for taking care of homeless people. So I said, fine. They sat down in my office. There's a man and a woman and they sat down there and I said, okay, what is your plan? How much money do you need to raise? How many houses are you going to build? Well, we don't know any of that. Well, I'm not going to invest money in folks that are just out on a whim doing something and they've got no planning. Paul says, I've given order to the church. What he means is we've got a plan in place. We've got a system of doing this. And you have to have a plan. You might say, well, I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants and hope God blesses it. He won't. All right, I've seen that done. He doesn't. There's got to be a plan. So Paul says, I have given order to the churches. I've laid out how to do it. Notice number two, not only is the collection presented, but the collection is planned. Verse number two. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store. See, Paul gives them a plan on how to do it. Now, as I studied and read this, some people said, well, they got paid on the first day of the week. Now, that's kind of hard to imagine in our American economy. Kind of hard to imagine somebody getting paid on Sunday. Who works on Sunday? The banks aren't open on Sunday. But I don't know how the system worked back then, but most of us get paid on Friday. Now, there might be some exceptions, but most people get paid on Friday. In fact, the first Friday of the month, when all the welfare checks go out, you don't want to be driving around Cambridge, Ohio, because that's a busy time, that Friday is. But Friday is usually. So how appropriate is it that we get paid on Friday, and God, knowing American culture ahead of time, said, all right, you get paid on Friday, on the first day of the week, 2 days later, before you get an opportunity to blow it all, on the first day of the week, let every man lay aside as God hath prospered him. He has a plan to how to do it. You get the money out of your pocket from Friday when you get paid, hurry up and get it in there Sunday. You know, I've had folks say when it comes to tithing, well, after I pay my electric bill and after I pay this and after I pay that and after I pay this, then I'll give God some money. I've got news for you. You will struggle your entire life financially. And I can just say it by years of experience and talking with you. You will struggle financially when you do it that way. Because people say, well, I'll do that, and then after that's done, when I get on my feet, then you'll never get on your feet that way. God's got a plan. God's got a system. God's got a way of doing things. And the best thing we can do is yield to God's plan and yield to His system and not fight against it. And so Paul said, I've got a plan. It's systematic. Upon the first day of the week. Now, I believe he said the first day of the week because that's when the saints were meeting. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists would give us an argument over that. They would say that Saturday's the day to meet. But I find in the New Testament that they went on the first day of the week and met together. So Paul said, here's the day to do it. Let's plan that collection on the first day of the week. Notice number three, the collection is personal. The collection is presented, the collection is planned, the collection is personal. He said, let every one of you, you know what we do with our children? We teach them to give at a very young age. It's not something, there's not a little switch that we flip when they turn 18 or 20 and teach them to give. If they're not giving people when they're little, they're not going to be giving when they're grown up. So we teach them to give. We teach them, you know, the minute they start making some money on whatever it is, well, 10% of that needs to go back to God. You need to put the Lord first and give that to Him. We teach that plan as it's in the Bible. And so Paul said, let every one of you, we're encouraging the children downstairs in Sunday school. And these kids, as we know, come from homes that don't have a lot of money. We're not asking them to give a lot. We emphasize to them pennies, nickels, dimes, but let's get in the habit of giving something to God. Let's get in the habit, and blessed, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Let's get in the habit of giving. And so Paul said, every one of you. Let me ask you this, are you a giver? Do you give? Do you want God to give to you? Do you God want God to be a blessing to you? Well, He conditions it on us being a blessing. I feel bad for people that are not givers by nature. And there are folks that are not givers by nature. There are folks that are hoarders, if we can say it that way. There are folks that are tight-fisted, penny pinchers, whatever you want to say. There are folks that are like that. And if you're one of those in here, I don't know about it, and thank God I don't know about it, and don't let me know about it. But there are folks that are like that. Then there are folks that are just free to give. And you know, those are the happier people. And so if we're not that way, we ought to try to get ourselves and talk to God and say, God, make me one of those. God loveth a cheerful giver. Giving makes us happy. All right, so we see the collection is presented, it's planned, it's personal. Verse number two, it's proportionate. Giving is proportionate. Notice in verse two, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him. You know what that means? Those that get more should give more. Those that get less are okay to give less. But you know what the Lord said when He sat there at the temple and He saw all them giving of their abundance, but that one little widow that went in and put in all of her living, He said, she have given more than them all. You know, that's usually how most churches are. Most churches are not financed. You know, you go visit some different places and you go to some church and they've got some millionaire that's in the church or something. That's not the guy. That's not the people that are keeping the church going. It's the average people that are giving and giving and giving. We've been blessed with a lot of average people. We've been blessed with an abundance of average people, and God is taking care of us because of that. And Paul said, let everyone you get as God hath prospered him. Again, this is not the tithe. I'm glad that the tithe is sent. I always appreciate the Lord making it as crystal clear as He can, because I can make it foggy if He doesn't. So I'm glad for the tithing system that 10% belongs to God and it's easy to figure out. And then I'm thankful that everything above that is a blessing. You know, when you gave this morning of your tithe, that was simply, as we've said before, getting God's money out of your pocket. Doing what the Bible commands and giving the 10%, giving God His money back, because that money is His. It's up to Him what He does with it. So we give it back to Him. Then we come in tonight, and it's even more of a blessing because what we put in tonight was above and beyond our tithe. It was something we didn't have to give, but we chose to give it anyways. Can I tell you, that's what makes God's blessings pour out upon us. That's when the Bible says He opens up the windows of heaven and pours out a blessing, because we have a giving heart. Paul desires for this church of Corinth, with all their problems. Remember the immorality he's dealt with? The bickering that he's dealt with? The divisions? In all these things, he concludes this chapter with telling this church, if you want to be blessed, use your resources. Use your money wisely. Use your opportunities. Use your people in a way that glorifies God. So Paul talks about that collection. Notice not only does he talk about the saving of that collection in verse 1 and 2, but then he talks about the sending of that collection in verse 3 and 4. They're going to gather it at Corinth, but then they're going to send it back to Jerusalem. Who's going to be the messenger? Who's going to be the courier? Paul? Paul, are we going to give that money to you to take back to Jerusalem? Paul says, boy, I sure don't want that responsibility. There's a testimony to be kept by Paul, and he says, I don't want to handle that money. I don't want to be given that money because I don't want people to think of me as someone that's taking that money himself. So he says in verse number 3, and when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality into Jerusalem. You know, Paul says, I don't want to touch the money. Paul says in the church, he says, you pick out somebody that can take that money from here and there's some dispute whether Paul is writing from Ephesus or Philippi at this time. We'll talk about that in a moment. But whether place he is, he says, you gather that money at Corinth and then you take that money back to the church at Jerusalem and maybe I'll go with you. Look at verse number 4. And if it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Paul says, maybe I'll accompany them, but you pick out some men to handle that money. It's a good example for preachers. Don't be responsible for the money. Don't handle the money. I might just simply say this. While we took the offering and while we were beginning our service, a couple of men were back in the office. They were taking care of the money. That's the way to keep it above board. That's the way to keep it clean. That's the way to keep the pastor from being accused of different things financially. Let somebody else take care of that money. And so Paul said, I'm going to keep myself clean. I'm going to keep myself above board. Somebody else is going to handle the finances. He said, you get the money together. And then he wanted the approval of the church on who would be sent to take that money. And so he said to them in verse 3, when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve. I appreciate the Apostle Paul. He had strong leadership, did he not? He said in verse number 1, I've given order. And again, not commandment, not bossing, but he's laid out the instructions. But Paul had a great leadership ability. But when it came time for the church to have activity, he allowed the church to be active. There's a lot of times where the pastor does not have good leadership and the church is run by the congregation and things usually have a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. I was talking to somebody just the other day, and they were saying they were joking about something and talking about a battle that said it's just kind of like a church business meeting. And I thought, wouldn't know. Don't know how those fights go. I've heard about them. I've heard about people getting mad and red in the face and pointing fingers and yelling and screaming back and forth. Wouldn't know about those things. We don't have that kind of problem. We've got the right kind of leadership, and we've got the right kind of congregational activity, and we've not had to go through those different bumps and bruises. So Paul, I appreciate his leadership, but I appreciate the involvement of the church that he had active in that. And he said in verse 4, as I said already, if it be meet, it may be that I will go also with them as they take the money to Jerusalem, but maybe I won't. Maybe I'll go, maybe I won't, but they will take care of it. They will handle it. The collection for the saints at Jerusalem. Then look, if you would, in verse 5 to 9, the coming to the saints at Corinth. The coming to the saints at Corinth. Paul talked about the collection for the saints at Jerusalem, but now he talked about the coming to the saints, that Paul would come to them at Corinth in verse 5. Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia, and it may be, I've circled those two words, it may be that I will abide, yea, winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. In verse 5 to 7, we see Paul's intended plans. Paul's intended plans. In verse 6, he says, it may be that I will abide. You know, Paul was human. And Paul did not know every circumstance that would befall him. He didn't know everything that was going to happen to him. And sometimes he said, I hope so. I'm planning to. If God be willing, notice what he says at the end of verse 7, if the Lord permit. Paul made plans, but he also recognized that the Lord was sovereign, the Lord was in charge, and he might just change those plans. Keep your place there and look, if you would, at James chapter 4. James chapter 4 and verse number 15. James said something along the same line that Paul says here in 1 Corinthians, for that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or do that. If the Lord will. Paul is saying back here in chapter 16, it may be that I will come and abide with you at Corinth if the Lord permit. Let me say first of all, it's good to have a plan. It's good to make plans. Merle and Kathy are planning to leave Wednesday to go down to Florida, spend the... Nothing wrong. You need to have a plan. It would drive a wife nuts, and I don't ask me how I know this, but it would drive a wife nuts if you said, we're going to do this, and she says, when? Well, whenever we feel like it. Whenever the mood hits me, whenever the urge strikes me, then we'll do it. That drives our wives crazy. You know what the best way to do? Have a plan. Say, we're going to go to Florida. Well, when are we going to go? Well, whenever we're ready, whenever we decide to go. And then she doesn't know when to pack the bags and when to be ready. And then if you're like me, it's like, okay, let's go now. And the bags aren't packed yet. The things aren't ready. We just, you know, that's how us men are. You know what Paul said? I've got a plan to the church at Corinth. I plan to come and see you. And he said, it may be that I will come and abide in winter with you if the Lord permit. Can I tell you this? Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Paul had a plan. He planned to come to Corinth and abide for the winter. But the plan didn't work out. The Apostle Paul, the great Apostle Paul, the great Christian man, his plan didn't work out. Now you say, wait a minute. If he's writing by inspiration of God and he wrote back there in 1 Corinthians 16, I'm going to come to Corinth, and he didn't come, how could what he wrote been inspired? He didn't do it. Because God used his human instrumentality. And Paul said, it may be, if the Lord permit. And circumstances didn't work out for him to be able to come. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse number 15, and this is in this confidence I was minded to come to you before. All right, now in 2 Corinthians he says, remember I said I was going to come, I wanted to come to winter. I was minded that you might have a second benefit, verse 16, and to pass unto you into Macedonia, and to come again out of Macedonia unto you, and to be brought toward my way toward the Lord. When I therefore was thus minded, did I use lightness? Or the things that I purpose, do I purpose according to the flesh, that with me there should be yea and nay? You know what Paul's saying? All right, I didn't make it. I wasn't able to come. But am I really to be blamed? Because you remember the church at Corinth? A lot of them loved the Apostle Paul. They were all for him. Some of them were divided and some of them were against him. And they just looked for an opportunity for him not to keep his word and then point the finger and say, look what he did. Look what he did. See what he said? He didn't fulfill it. There are people looking for stuff like that. And these people looked at Paul like that, and Paul said in verse 17, did I use light mind? When I therefore was like thus minded, did I use lightness? Or the things that I purpose, do I purpose according to the flesh? So Paul said, if the Lord permit, I will do this, or I will do that. He had intended plans. John Steinbeck, the great novelist of earlier times, said, the best laid plans of men and mice often go awry. Now, I don't know about plans of mice. I didn't know they made. That was in his book of Men and Mice. So I didn't know, but I know men make plans that often go awry, and they don't fill out. Sometimes because of neglect, but many times because the Lord didn't permit in that direction. So Paul's intended plans in verse 5 to 7. And then verse 8 and 9, Paul's immediate plans. And I like this. For a great door and effectual. He says in verse 8, I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost. Now if you look at the end of this chapter, if you have a Bible like I do, it says the first epistle to the Corinthians was written from Philippi. Philippi. So that tells me that Paul is in Philippi when he's writing this letter. Some of the scholars say he was in Ephesus. I just take verse 8 as saying he's in Philippi and he's saying, I'll get as far as Ephesus and I'll tarry there until Pentecost. Then my plan is to come. So he's got an immediate plan and a future plan. His immediate plan, but I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost. Remember, Pentecost was the feast that was celebrated 50 days after the Passover. And Paul, to keep honor among the Jews, celebrated the Jewish feast back in those days. So he said, I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me. Where? At Ephesus. We read about the revival in Acts chapter 19 that took place at Ephesus and the great pouring out of the Spirit, the things that happened there. He said, a great door and effectual is opened unto me. I like this. Ephesus was a place of opportunity. He said, a great door and effectual is opened unto me. A place of opportunity. I'm glad that God gives us opportunity to serve Him. We're not worthy to serve the God of creation, the God of heaven. The choir sits here on Sunday morning and we begin to sing some songs under Gary's instruction. We're not worthy to sing with these lips praises to our God. We're not worthy, Brother Bill, to drive a bus. And you know I'm not pointing, Eric and Deanna, we're not worthy to teach young kids under our care. We're not worthy as deacons. We're not worthy as Sunday school teachers. We're not worthy in anything that God would allow us to do. It's all because of His grace and because of His mercy and because He's given us opportunity. Are we looking for opportunities? Saying, Lord, I know I'm not worthy, but there's a great door at Effectual that's been opened to me. Are we looking for open doors to serve God? Most of the time we're just saying, no, I'm content to do what I'm doing and no more. God will not open doors that way. But Paul said there's great opportunity. But with opportunity comes opposition. And that's why a lot of folks don't take the advantage of opportunities. Because with opportunity comes opposition. If the devil recognizes that God's going to do something, you know what the devil does? He writes it down in his little diary and he says, well, I'm going to do something about that. He sees Job, a just man and upright, and he says to God, let me touch him. Job had many opportunities. He was a blessing and a comfort to many around him. And the devil said, I want to put an end to that. Let me touch him. Where there's opportunity, there will be opposition. Paul said in verse 9, a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. You know what I like about that verse? He didn't say, but. He didn't say, there's a great door open, but there are many. He said, and. That's a difference in attitude. That's a difference in outlook. He said, I've got great opportunity, and, not but, I don't care, and there are adversaries. No one has probably accomplished as much in one lifetime as the Apostle Paul did for the glory of God. Again, when we studied the book of Acts, all the missionary journeys and all the churches he started and all the young men he influenced to pastor those churches, you know, we look at that and we're just in awe of what he did. But do you know he had some opposition? We read there in 1 Corinthians, in perils by my own countrymen, in perils by the sea, in beatings and fastings and nakedness and thirstings and all that. There was a lot of adversaries while he was taking advantage of his opportunities. Just realize that with the opportunities, it's not but there are many adversaries, and there are many adversaries. This morning, we wanted to celebrate the 23rd anniversary of Bible Baptist Church, a great day, build up, looking forward to it. And what happens? The rains come on Friday, and the rains come all day Saturday, at least half a day Saturday, and the water sets around the foundation, and it comes in like it's never done before and floods the basement down there. There are many adversaries. And it'd be very easy to just throw your hands up and say, why, God? Why did you allow this to happen? Well, God allowed it to happen. Whether He did it or not, He allowed the devil to do it. So what do? You don't say, but there are many adversaries. You just say, and there are many adversaries. You see the difference in the attitude? It's not discouragement and quitting because there are adversaries. It's saying, all right, if we're doing something right, there's going to be some opposition. We're going to expect it and understand it, but we're going to keep going. Paul said, for a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. A place of opportunity is also a place of opposition. When you're doing right and someone opposes it, that's just God's stamp of approval that you're doing right. That's not judgment. That's not chastisement. That's just God's stamp of approval saying, yeah, you're doing the right thing. And when you do the right thing, there are going to be adversaries. Paul is talking about the great resources of the church. Money, a collection for the saints, opportunity, an open door. We need to be looking for opportunities, looking for ways that we can be a blessing to our church and a blessing to God through the avenues that He gives us to be a blessing to Him. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Father, tonight we thank You as Your saints, as Your church, that God, You're interested in